Hello and welcome to the Clydesdale Chronicle, where we focus on preserving the stories of the past, addressing the issues of today, and generating ideas for the future. Enjoy. So today we are at the Grange Fair. I'm sitting down with a family with deep Clydesdale history. Actually, the cover of the 1990 Clydesdale News cover couple, Roger and Linda Toms, and also joined with their son, Jason Toms. So tell me a little bit about how you guys got started. You know, obviously your family has deep history, so we'll do you one at a time.
Go ahead, Linda.
Oh, I got to go first. Okay, so I'm third generation Clydesdale breeders. My grandfather started with bays. We wanted something different other than Belgians and Percherons. I grew up in Monroeville, PA. We had a 120 cow operation. We produced, processed, and sold right there on the farm. And we needed something to advertise our business. So we started with the Clydes, something different, and nobody in the state had them at that point. And we just advertised, and it just grew. And, you got a team. Well, what's a team? You need a four. So we got a four. And then, wow, suddenly we needed a six. So 1976 was the first time we went to the show ring at Ohio State Fair with our six-horse hitch. With they were five mares and one stallion, because we couldn't afford to have all these fancy geldings and so on. So it... We went in a ring against Don Castanasso, and it was Dan Jones, but I forget who was driving for him, but Dad came out on top. So that was like that was the bug.
That was
the first year we hooked six.
That's really cool.
In 1976, and I'll never forget it. It was like the best thing in the world. I remember my brother coming down the alleyway between the Coliseum and the outdoor, that open area, just shaking his fist that we won. So that was the coolest, one of my best experiences.
It's almost like a high.
It was such a euphoria.
Yeah.
And my brother and I and my mom and dad, we hooked those horses like three nights a week, four nights a week, you know, whatever we could in between milking cows and everything else. So we worked really hard.
So you obviously are still in this today and still into the Clydes. Do you have your brother that you spoke of? Does he still involved?
No, he's a pig guy.
Okay.
But he's still like, he drives a little bit. Like he drove with us. My father passed away last year, and we took him to the cemetery with the horses, and he drove, and he said, I could get back in. So, but he's a swine nutrition reproduction specialist at Minnesota University.
Okay.
Very supportive.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. He supports us very much so.
That's
yeah.
awesome.
Yeah.
So what about you, Roger? What about your background, your family start?
Well, third generation on showing draft horses. My grandfather and Ned farmed with horses, and he went to the Clydes, but he claimed that they had better wind going up and down over the hills out in Iowa.
Mm-hmm.
And so he started in getting more Clydes. And back in the 30s, they started showing at the Iowa State Fair. And the office burnt, and I think in 1936 or 38, and there's record of him showing halter horses and cart horses back then. And in 1958, they put a six together and started showing a six-horse hitch.
Okay.
He was 82 when he went to the ring the last time with his six-horse hitch, 82 years old.
Holy crap. So was it your dad that would have been at the World Show? Is it in
2007, dad won the over 65.
I remember that when he threw his hat. Was your mom still on the wagon with
mom,
him?
Yeah. Mom was with him, yeah.
That was a cool moment because you could just see that same passion you just spoke
so
of.
Happy.
Yeah.
So he was thrilled. That trophy sat front and center in the living room.
That's really cool. I just remember that moment because it was just you could. That
his
same,
dad was in too. His dad was
I thought
in
both
the ring.
Of them were.
My dad was the oldest.
The oldest. Okay. He was 82 too, wasn't he? Or 81?
He was 79 or 81 somewhere right.
Okay.
I thought it was 81. I thought it was.
So
82.
Did they have a little rivalry against each other?
No.
Just happy to support each other to be there.
Oh yeah.
That's
my dad.
That was the one thing about our parents. They supported us and each other.
Yeah.
That morning of the driving thing, Dad couldn't sleep that night. He was so excited to do it.
So they drove, both of them drove two teams that you guys would have had there.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you kind of spoke yesterday to kind of get us closer to today, but you spoke of that world show, and it was, I think it was at 11 as well, or 7, that you came into there and sold head?
We sold 5 out of the 7 horses that we owned, and we sold 2 out of the, 2 sets of the
show harness. That's pretty cool.
And never advertised or nothing, just all word of mouth.
That's pretty cool.
Well, we didn't sell the 8th one because we didn't own them.
So, yeah.
Yeah, it's probably a good idea not to sell them.
Yeah, unless you get this superior number that you know the person would be happy with. Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
Very cool. So how did you two meet?
There's people trying to get us together for quite a few years, and it never happened. And I was driving for the H.J. Hines Company, and we met at the St. Patrick's Day Parade in Pittsburgh.
Okay.
I was there with my team. We always called for a congressman.
Okay.
And that's where we met.
And they forgot the bridles for their, when they went to hook up, and that's, they came over and asked if we had any extra bridles to hook up any for them.
Yeah. That was Dad's fault. It wasn't mine. Certainly wasn't mine.
So after that, it was just...
It was history.
Pretty much. Very... In 1969, my parents were at his parents' farm. They were on their way to Cheyenne to the Frontier Days.
Okay.
And they stopped. They wanted to see the Clydes. We got our Clydes in 70, and they just wanted to see Clydes. So Roger was, 7, running around there. And my dad always said, if I would have known then what I know now, I would have kicked him in the hiner because he took my help away. So and they actually, when we started dating, they pulled out their guest book, and there was Mom and Dad's signature. Yeah.
So, total family here, how many generations now? Obviously, you have 2 boys, but total in your family, how many, what would the grandchild be generation-wise with?
He'd be 5th.
Yeah, yep. I'm Jason's 4th. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, Jason's 4th.
Oh, gotcha. So, Ethan, we'll introduce Ethan. He's not with us. Ethan where is he living now?
Craig, Colorado.
Okay. Gotcha. What took him out there?
Well, I think his wife.
Okay.
Yeah, it was her fault.
Oh.
No. We love Megan. She's fantastic. So he went out there several years ago to work at Steamboat Springs in the state parks.
Okay.
As a ranger. And he just fell in love with the area.
Okay.
So he stayed out there. He met Megan. They moved to New Mexico for a little while and then just moved back to Craig in May of this year.
Yep.
Okay.
They have a 2-year-old little boy, Casey. Turn 2.
The 5th generation.
Yeah.
That's pretty damn cool.
Yep.
So, Jason, you worked for a little stint with Anheuser-Busch.
Yep.
How long were you there?
Right at 4 years.
Okay.
So, started out as an intern.
Yep.
I did about 9 months and right after college and took the first opening in St. Louis. Day one, it was kind of cool. I got to be day one of full-time working there. I worked in all 3 hitches already.
Okay.
So it was kind of cool.
Well, since they're all based out of Warm Springs there? Or is
now they are. So the East and West Coast are based out of Warm Springs Ranch.
Okay.
And then St. Louis Hitch is still based out of the brewery, St. Louis.
So I've heard rumor, and I don't know anything to this, but with Budweiser, they kind of try to reprogram on how you roll a main to their standard or what they would do. How was that? Because you obviously grew up in decorating classes and showing horses and with some previous knowledge. Did you feel like it was almost a restructuring, or would you think it was pretty close to what you were taught?
It was pretty much the same thing.
Same.
Driving was a little different. We had to, learning from how my dad drives, he drives everything from the bottom up over his thumb. They wanted me to run the lead line down, and I got stuck between the 2 different methods. I was always grabbing in the wrong spot for the wrong line.
Yeah, because you were used to one, and something else was new for it.
But for the decorating, just had to learn where they stopped because they didn't pick their heads up or check them up as hard. So I just had to learn where the collar was, and that's about the only difference that I had to worry about.
So did you enjoy the experience, or did it? Do you think it ever turned you off of the love of the hobby of it, or making it a full-time job?
Just the traveling alone. I was always working with horses, so I'd be lost without a barn to run to. And then I did every major sporting event except for a soccer game.
Okay.
World Series parades, and each week we're in a different town. So I got pretty much paid to see the country.
Gotcha. Good job for a young person that's not tied down yet.
Yeah.
Cool. So what are your plans for the 2025 World Clydesdale Show?
going to take a six-horse hitch and go out and have fun.
Okay. Very cool. Are any of them go back to your family or your genetic line, or where do they? Did you buy them as colts? What? How did the process start?
Well, we got most of them as two-year-olds, two young stuff. We have Hatfield Fader.
Yep.
Hatfield's a pretty solid black. Got a lot of black genetics. And
you know, Monty Thompson.
Yeah. Yep. We're running five geldings. Well, I guess four now. Four geldings and a stud and a mare.
So okay.
Our breeding program is not real strong with the geldings. So, you know, we call him Herman. It's Vader, but we call him Herman. He's, I think, a good horse to keep that black genetics running. And that's what we want to do. So, the mare, we just bought her from at the Clydesdale this year.
Yep.
So hopefully we didn't get her bred this year, but we'll breed her next year. Hopefully keep her, get her own genetics going.
Cool. So is that the plan? Maybe breed a mare, have a couple foals
just
every year?
Just a couple. Yep. Yeah.
I know
just
you've kind of got mentioned like there's no estrogen rule on the farm, so that,
I'm
that
the
mare
only
has broke that.
Allowed there.
The mare's broke that though now.
Yeah, yeah, she did. Yeah.
Watch, she'll probably just have fillies and.
She probably will, and they'll go down the road.
Or if somebody comes in with enough money, they're all for sale.
Yeah, absolutely.
Jesus, I'm probably for sale.
No, I don't think. I don't think.
If you get enough, now we've been 36 years married, so either he's asking too much or he really doesn't want to sell.
I think you got to keep the price high. Yep. So we talked to the other night a little bit in the barn that you hadn't. You were talking about retirement. What do you do for work, Linda?
I am a healthcare administrator.
Okay.
I've run an orthopedic practice for the last 25 years. I've been in healthcare for 42 years.
Okay.
So COVID kind of kicked my butt.
Yeah.
Kind of fried me a little bit. And so March 31st, I'm freewheeling. I came home the other night. It was like an 11-hour day at work. And I grabbed a team and went for a drive. And I'm thinking, you know, I was having a hard time wrapping my head around it.
Yeah.
I'm thinking, 10 o'clock in the morning, if I want to go drive a team of horses,
you
can
do
it
then. Yeah.
And it'll just be, we work a lot. He works really hard. So we'll work together and maybe not be as wiped out at the end of a show like we are right now.
Yeah.
Running six for the two of us is a little hard.
Oh, yeah. Like the other night you came, or was it last night you came over here and we were talking about you, just you two getting the six horses ready.
Yeah.
Because you had some people that were lined up to come help and they weren't able to make it. And we were joking around about timing you and we didn't, but you guys were definitely there on time for the class. And
well, I timed us, but it was.
What was the time? Because we talked
24
about
24 minutes.
24 minutes. Yeah.
No, actually, we had some friends come up and help us that the crew that helped us the first night that. They're new, so they don't know a whole lot.
Yeah,
they're great step and fetch it, and they're learning and they're doing fantastic.
Yeah,
but Wyatt Carbaugh came up and helped us, and now we have our trusty Jason for tonight, so we'll be in good shape.
Very cool. So what, Roger? What was your? I'm not familiar. I guess what did you do for work? I know you had a big stint driving some Belgians full time.
Yeah, I started at shoeing horses.
Okay.
And I nailed my first shoes on when I was 8 years old on a pony.
Okay.
And then when we started getting our own horse or showing our horses at home with my sisters and I and couldn't afford to have somebody do them, so I started shoeing them and start shoeing more just for other people just to keep getting better.
Yeah.
And so there's 50-some years of shoeing horses. And then I started working with Dick Sparrow with the Coors hitch. I helped with the 40-horse hitch and with the Coors hitch and then with the H.J. Hines Company.
Okay. Very cool. So then you did a stint with
Don Sherwood with the Belgians for...
We went to the dark side for a little bit. We came back home, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was 8 years?
8 years we did it.
That's a pretty good stint, really.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Very cool. So how was it bringing, because didn't you sell most of the Clydes then when you were with Don?
The first year we tried to show both the Clydes and it was just
too much
work.
Yeah.
So we said, you know, Don's paying the bills. So we got rid of the Clydes and focused on the Belgians. And then when that was over, we got back into our Clydes.
So you enjoying having your own horses back
nice
in your own barn?
Yeah.
Don was absolutely fantastic. We totally enjoyed our 8 years.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
But we also felt that we weren't hitting enough shows. We couldn't get him to where he wanted to be.
Yeah.
And it was time to let somebody else take the lines and move ahead.
And now you're coming back home with your own breed.
Yep.
And but as a family.
Dawn was totally supportive and fantastic about it all. And Scott's doing a great job for you.
Yes.
Yeah. It's good to work for good people, but there is something to, like, I've had outside horses in the barn, but when it's just your horses back in your barn, there's just some peace and you don't worry as much. And it's like, God, what if something happens? I got to make this phone call.
Right.
And good owners are great about it, but it's just, I think it screws with your own brain.
It's psychological.
Yes.
When you have your own horses in the barn, you go out there and it's actually enjoyable. You're not stressed about somebody wanting to get to a level or pushing an animal beyond what should be right there just to get there. And you can go out and just enjoy the process of your own horses and let them take their time and build into what they need to be.
Yeah, you want to drive a lot, but you're pushed more for somebody else, you know, constant keeping a regular routine on driving when they're your own. Okay, I can drive today, I can drive tomorrow, or just trying to work it in a little better.
You go back to enjoying the process and not being a job.
Right.
Because anything turns into a job if you're doing it all the time.
And we never wanted to hate what we love.
Yeah, yeah.
And we like to take the young horses and turn them into something. We can't afford to buy a $40,000 gelding.
No, but it's so cool to see this scrubby colt that you get and then see what they can turn into.
Yes.
To me, that's the horsemanship in it, where you can kind of
take it to
see those baby steps, and it keeps you going. It keeps you patient and pushing. Mm-hmm. And then you see them bloom into this cool horse.
That's what we drive, is mostly all young horses.
Yeah.
And as soon as they start coming into themselves, everybody's coming and buying them and going on, and they come back and haunt us and beat us.
Yeah.
And there's nothing better.
No, because you got them to that point where someone saw the desire and
those blue ribbons never put food in front of our kids.
No.
That's nice to have. Don't get me wrong. But our goal was always to.
The future.
Yep.
Yeah. So speaking of selling horses, you had a memorable pair that we talked about personally the other night. You had Joe was one of the name of the horses.
And Bud.
Bud.
Yep.
Tell me about those horses, where they came from.
My sister raised Joe.
Okay.
Becky Feeble, and they found Bud out of the Des Moines, Iowa Sunday paper, seen him advertised, and they went and looked at him. I think he was still a stud or just got gelded anyway as a six-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
And he was not very big.
$600.
Yep.
$600 gelding.
Holy, those days are freaking gone.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, they didn't know what they had.
Yeah.
And they wanted to get him ready for the Clyde sale, and we told him we'd, you know, bring him back to PA and get him ready. And the more we drove, the more we liked him. He didn't bring it. He no-sailed him at the Clyde sale, and we brought him back, and he ended up doing great.
Mm-hmm.
He's the one of the bigger, big little horse. He barely stood 17 hands. He wore a 28-inch collar, and he had a 11.5 shoe I put on him.
But just drove like a peacock. Oh,
just put his head up and just blow up and drive.
The longer you drove him,
the harder
he went.
Oh, cool.
I had to use the wall at Butler Fair to stop him. I could not begin to stop him. He drove great in the class, but man, we came out and I'm like, I'm done.
Yeah.
I'm done. Yep.
Those two were fun to drive. It was one upmanship between the two horses. You bitted him in the bottom and took a deep seat. But if you drove either one with another horse, bit him straight away and you had to push him to keep him going.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Huh. So what was the story? Where did those two horses, you kind of said they went to Canada.
Steve and Sherry.
Yep, they went up to Steve and Sherry Lewis. We traded for two other ones.
Okay.
And they won all over up there that year with them in their lead. And then that fall, they sold their whole hitch to Express, and that's when Express started out.
So those two were both in the first group that Express purchased.
Yep.
Back in the 90s.
There's the only two that Express kept until they died.
Okay.
And Joe was in the 2011 or 7?
Seven.
As a
18-year-old.
18-year-old, and I think he was like 5th or 6th in the gelding class.
Holy schmuck.
And he led the 8.
He led the winning 8.
That's pretty damn cool.
Oh, he was just the most fantastic horse. But if you put that back pad a little too far back, you were hosed.
Oh, really?
Oh,
he would start bucking and run
out.
Yep.
So you had to cinch that puppy tight to the cuff?
No.
Oh. It was too close to his withers.
Oh, you had to let it float
back. Sorry,
keep it back far enough. Yeah. And
then he was fine.
He was fine.
I went across the arena in Harrisburg in about 5 steps. And when I come around to the end gate, Roger said, "Well, I know what's wrong." Well, that's great.
Yeah,
I'm in the middle of the class. Thanks, buddy.
Yeah. Yep. I couldn't help get ready that year. Yeah. Horses. I was driving 4 other hitches at the Harrisburg at that show that year.
4 other?
Yeah. He just kept. I drove on
ours. I drove a Belgian mare for one of the first years. They started the mare sixes, and then I drove a pair hitch of Belgians.
Belgian. Mares.
No, the Belgian mares, the Belgian geldings of Hamilton's, and then Jim Hunter had a hitch.
Okay.
And,
Percher
and geldings, and I drove them. The one day there was 14 hitch classes. I was in 13 of them, and
because the other one was a
ladies' team.
How the hell do you keep the horses straight? Of what the hell are you even? Like, how do you bark a name at a horse? And
somebody rode with him.
They rode with me.
Jimmy, Sal. Oh, shit, Sally. Yeah. I don't know how the hell you keep that straight.
Yep, everybody had to have horses ready. And when I come out of
just
the ring,
top wagons.
I switched wagons and went right back in again.
Ay, ay, ay. That'd be nuts. Especially nowadays when everyone, it's like, this has got to happen at this time and this is this. And, but. Yeah, so what year would that have been in, you say?
96, 98?
Yeah.
Okay.
Something
around
the
90s.
Yeah. I think it was 96 because he was in a playpen and I had to have somebody watch him because.
Yep.
I
that's
think it
right.
was 96.
Was it a farm show or Keystone?
Keystone.
Okay, Keystone. Yeah. Yep.
That's nuts. So, Jason, what are you up to now since you left Anheuser-Busch? You've kind of got an interesting career right now.
Yeah. I just started. I'm assistant trainer for the Caisson division in Arlington National Cemetery.
Okay.
So we get the horses. They do what's called postillion riding.
Mm-hmm.
So all the horses are proven when they buy them to ride and drive. And we got to combine them and introduce them to postillion, where a soldier will ride on the left-hand horse and reach across and drive the right hand.
Okay.
And there's no swing pulls or double trees, so that was a learning curve for me.
Yeah.
Everything goes to the breast collar behind it.
Yep.
So yet the mechanics are kind of the same, but the way all the traces pull tight was kind of cool.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
I was talking to Abby earlier, and I didn't realize how big they were wanting to grow that and how many. She said right now you're only doing like two events
mission,
a day.
Or two so funerals, they call missions. So we do 2 missions a day in the morning. We got 2 squads going every 2 weeks. They rotate on and off base. The main goal is to get up to 6 or 7.
And she figured up to like 12 funerals a day then.
Yeah. So we only have 1 team going in at a time, but they want to have all of them somewhere in the cemetery doing a.
Wow, that's nuts.
How long's the waiting list for the funerals? It's like
someone mentioned it was like a couple years. Like they can keep a body up for like a year and a half or something like that.
Wow.
Well, I thought they buried them and then put.
I thought they just did.
I'm not too sure about all that.
Oh, okay.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's really kind of cool. So that is through the U.S. government.
Yep. The Army.
Okay. So you got great benefits.
It's part of Old Guard.
Okay.
And then we got. Working on 3rd squad horses right now. They go to Ocala in a month, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's 62 head right now all together. So Abby and I have the same job, and there's 1 other trainer.
Okay.
So we've been doing a lot of riding and driving and just trying to mix it all together.
Okay.
For the soldiers, and we got to kind of teach the soldiers a lot too.
Yep.
A year and a half ago, most of them never touched a horse in their life.
The soldiers?
Yep.
Wow.
So it's starting from ground zero.
Yeah. And it's, I don't know, I'm probably not the best teacher because for me it's hard when you know something, it's like second nature is to try to get to explain it in a, for me, a positive way is really a challenge.
It is pretty hard, yeah.
Yeah. Without being cutting or, that's not my strength. So you planning on keeping that for a career for a long time? Is it fulfilling? And
right now it's, I'm planning on staying there. It's kind of haywire right now because they're just building the whole, like during COVID they shut the whole program down.
Mm-hmm.
And they started from ground zero, so for them to nobody in the office really had any experience of running this whole deal, so now they're still figuring things out. It's just things are going every direction,
so they took a break for a little bit from my understanding.
Mm-hmm.
To kind of rebuild this. Who did the funerals then, or they just paused funerals?
They just stopped everything.
Wow. Well, so that until, created that list then.
Beginning of April, we started doing funerals again.
Okay. Wow. I think it's cool. Like, we're going to give the military families that much of a send off to their loved ones.
Absolutely. Yes. Absolutely. Yeah.
I think it's really incredible. Yeah. But so, how many people do that? How many people are employed there with 60 head?
So, there's a Barnes crew, probably 10 to 12 every day that do all the stalls and feeding and everything. It's kind of nice. I just show up and grab horses. I don't have to worry about feeding or cleaning.
God, you're spoiled.
It's awesome. 40 hours a week. I don't know what to do with the other 40, but
yeah.
Then so there's probably soldiers rotate a lot. So there's probably about 7 to 10 soldiers on a squad.
Okay.
And there's 3 full squads right now.
That's crazy. Cool. You think of the I just in my head I'm numbers and I'm thinking the money that the is going out for that. But what a better way to honor.
Well spent.
Very cool. So Roger, let's go back. You got to have some fun stories. You worked for Dick Sparrow for how many years? You got to have some incredible
off and on
stories.
All my life anyway. We only lived I'm originally from Iowa, yeah. So we were only 40 miles from Dick, and my parents then when they used to do a lot of hay rides and stuff in the winter, the fall. And they needed somebody to drive. My dad or my grandfather would go back and forth, or if they needed anything. And it was always fun to go over and help. And then they started taking 12 and 16 horses to Milwaukee to the circus parade.
Mm-hmm.
And got to help with some of that, hooking those. And then when Chappie Fox kept on Dick about bringing a 40, and that, you know, kind of it was a joke always, but it came real.
Yeah.
And to be part of that was awesome.
That's still historic today.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And there's still a lot of interesting things that went on. There was one time there was only 36 hooked. They forgot four. That was...
shit. Yeah, whose job was it to count?
Yeah.
With 40 harnesses, you can easily think, oh, yeah, there's somewhere around the corner, and you just completely freaking miss it.
Yeah. Yeah, they were near Hook, and it was out in Illinois. I can't remember whereabouts anyway, and we were hooking, and somebody, after they got them all hooked, and somebody went and started counting, and there was only 36 instead of the 40.
Oh, Jesus.
But nobody realized day, but until afterwards.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I've just heard so many Dick stories from
him. Oh, jeez.
So I figured you had a couple that maybe other people hadn't heard.
You know, his bark was harmful anyway. It just sounded worse than what he was anyway. He'd be hard of gold if, you know, you needed anything. He was always there to help you out. He was wanting to teach everything. He loved his grandkids, and they always were along.
Mm-hmm.
One of your greatest honors was carrying him on his final ride.
That's pretty.
Yep.
Yeah.
Wearing his jacket.
Yeah, wore his jacket.
His jacket.
That day, and out of the 40 jacket, his hat.
That's pretty cool. Again, just doing what Jason's doing, but for military people. You're honoring your mentor, your friend.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
He stayed at Waterloo, Iowa, at the National Dairy Cattle Congress after the draft horses there, an exhibition during the rodeo. And then we got to help him there and miss school anyway, and skip school and helped out there. And Dick wanted me to ride with him. And then he'd always hand me the lines and, you know, go out and drive them around the six. And then the one night he ended up having me do the exhibition that one night. It was pretty neat.
Did you know it was going to happen, or just hand it to you and just, here you go. It's your turn.
He handed it here. Take him in and go.
Oh, man.
And then
probably better that way, because otherwise you'd have been, you know, nervous and thinking about it. But just now, here, spur of the moment. Here, it's yours. Go.
Oh, yeah. And I forget where we were at. They just got done with pole bending. And Dick had a hitch, and we had a hitch. And we took out every other pole from when they had the pole bending with the horses. Then we went down with the six. He was on one side of the ring, and I was on the other side of the ring, and pole bending with six. Just playing around.
Well, when you do exhibitions, you got to come up with something
different.
Different.
fun.
To keep the, yeah.
And that's why I don't know how you hell you worked at Budweiser, because it's standing a horse here or doing a the same exhibition. But yeah, that would be, you got to make it fun. And that's what we were talking about last night. We were talking about having contests rolling mains, and you talked like you could roll a main back in the day in 3 minutes.
3 minutes.
And that blew my mind.
Yep, we had always a contest between the whole crew, and that we got going.
Yeah.
And we got it down to 3 minutes a main if they had a real decent main to roll, and we got it down to about 45 seconds on tying a tail.
That's nuts. I know with Jason Rose, I've helped them at Denver, and we have to, on Sundays you hook it 3 times a day, and you're there for 17 days, and I think you hook a like 22 times or 23 times, and we got it down to start to finish, groom, braided, harnessed, hooked in 45, and we were super proud of that. But yeah, it was a game every day to see if we can beat the next number.
Yep.
Yeah.
So we can get back to playing cards.
We're in DeKalb, Illinois, and that with the Coors hitch, and Dick says, we got a hook, because it was kept raining every day, and we just kept, the tent was kind of in a low area where we had the stall, so we just kept adding more shavings all the time, so we weren't in the
keeping
water.
Keeping that base, yeah.
Keeping enough base, and it was getting close to the end of the time, and for being there, and Dick went downtown to talk to the guys, and they said, yeah, we got two places to go. Dick come back and he says, we gotta be downtown in a half hour. And we all, five of us all kind of looked at each other, and half hour. Yeah, he says, get to work. And 29 minutes later, Dick's changed and said, get up on the wagon. I rolled all the mains. The other guys started tying tails, and then when something was done, they kept harnessing. And 29 minutes, we timed it. He said, get up on the wagon.
Holy crap. That's pretty damn, that's cool. That is neat. Yeah, you got to do something to keep your morale up, and otherwise it gets to be
challenge.
So monotonous.
Yep.
So. My first experience with Dick was at Washington, D.C. when we were dating. He took me down to meet him and crawled up on the wagon. Come on up on the wagon with me. And you know Dick, he's interesting. And we went around.
Kind of a Casanova.
I was trying to use the word there. He went out and he just threw the lines at me. Well, I gathered them all up and went around, and I did turn the wrong way. Dang near, because the one horse in that used to exhibition, you turn him one way, he's turn ready to roll to spin the top, and I was not ready to check him back.
Yeah.
And thank heavens Roger was up there too. But turned around and went around, stopped them, and looked at Dick, and he said, well, I guess you'll do. So that's how I got my approval that I could marry Roger.
That's neat. Yep. Well, so we kind of always end this a little bit. So if we're going to go around the table, if you got something like some sort of wisdom for someone new getting into this, or anything that you've learned that you think would help somebody new or even in it to appreciate or to look at when they're buying a horse, or any of the best advice you've ever received? We'll start with.
Sure. buying a horse, you pick out something, and also if you know somebody in the horse business, kind of help go along with you to look at something. One thing I don't like is somebody new and never been around the horses buying a young one and trying to think they're going to grow up. If they buy something a little bit older or something broke, and they can kind of learn with, together instead of learning all at one time,
Yeah.
And it makes it a lot easier.
All right, Linda.
We did driving schools for many, many years.
Oh, yeah.
Many, many years. Our biggest thing that we always harped on is safety. Just, it doesn't matter how good your horse is. You've always got to be on your guard. And safety was our biggest focus. And I see a lot of things people do, and I'm like, makes me a little nervous. But we continue to learn, and we will continue to learn and watch other people and say, hey, that would work in our program. I don't think we want to do that. But until they throw dirt in our face, we better be learning. Because if you're not changing, you're not growing.
Right.
So you've always got to be on top of the game.
Constantly evolving.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you guys have done it your whole life, and you're still looking like,
we still look for things.
Yep. Sometimes it's that little thing that you change that's the difference for one horse.
When you're down the line in the show ring, step off your wagon and look what the people are doing, winning, and try to make your horses do that. Too.
Yeah, maybe not all of that.
If that's
but
your goal.
No, but try to get the most out of them and see it.
Right.
Yeah.
And see
what's appealing. What might be appealing about their group that maybe your group is missing.
It's missing.
Yeah.
Right.
Sure. Yeah.
Don't be mad at them. They didn't place themselves.
No. No. Yeah. But there is something to, if you're barn blind, you're never looking to get better because you just think you're already there.
Yeah. And we consider ourselves winning, even if we were last place. You make it in the ring and out of the ring, and the horses do what you want. They come home to our place, not theirs.
And you're feeding them and you like them.
Yep.
It's okay with us.
Well, go out and have fun.
Same number of pieces. It's always a good day.
Yeah. All right, Jason.
We gave you a lot of time there, buddy.
Yeah.
Well, you gotta hit most of them. I was just saying, pick somebody that's not necessarily on top, but somebody like my dad's a good driver. So if you want to get better at driving, pick somebody, go
that
talk
you
to
respect.
Him.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you want to, depending if you want to halter or driving, just make friends and just start picking their brain and just watch what they do and just keep going and try to make what you're doing match what they're doing. Slowly you'll get better and better to where you're right neck to neck with.
Yeah, I had a note, and I haven't even looked at my notes, but I did have a note about your driving school. How long did you do that?
Ooh.
96 to...
10 years ago.
I say right before you took Sherwoods.
Right before we took over Sherwoods, because we couldn't do all of that, and we couldn't run 12 head of horses to keep them. So it would have been...
Yeah, because I came back from high school finals
2013.
When I was a junior in high school. And it was right after I went to college that you guys quit.
Yep. So
13, 14.
14, 15.
So do you still have, is there any more demand for that? Because I would think like nowadays, you look at the youth classes and you see that there's quite a, like even today was an incredible youth show. And you think, well, is there a demand for that yet? Because I would think there still would be.
Oh, yeah.
I think there would be.
But not maybe to do a schooling, but like a private weekends.
We would still ask that a lot.
I think it's a cool thing, so just shout out your phone number. If there's somebody out here that wants to do schooling, here's a good way to learn from someone that's done it their whole life and obviously is a horseman and not just a needle pusher.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Someone that's working with colts. And what better way to learn is to drive something that's not
push
dead
button.
Broke.
Push
button. Because that way you know when something is going to go wrong. The half the time, you learn the most when you get in a little bit of
a pickle.
Pickle, mm-hmm. Yes.
Right.
And if you have a push button horse all the time, like then you're never when something bad does happen, you have no clue of how to respond to it. So
well, it's like the boys that drive in youth; they never drove the same horse 2 years in a row.
No,
sometimes not even two shows.
Just two
in a
shows
row.
In a row. Yeah. Because there's always something different.
That didn't make them a horseman. And
the
both
first
boys
year as youth sold my horse. Next.
Yeah. Oh God, he cried. I felt so bad. The guy actually called us later and said, "Do you want me to bring him back?" I'm like, "Nope. Better get used to it because that's the way we roll."
Yeah.
And Ethan is a fantastic driver as well. He's done great. He didn't go to the last world show. He is actually 2000 that we went to. 2011. Jason won the youth first team. Youth team.
And
top three in all.
Yep.
Well,
that's cool.
Yep. And Ethan's just as great of a driver and. He doesn't drive the multiples as much, but
But you learn to adapt. You know what every horse, a different horse, feels like. It's easier to drive a horse that's in the bid when you drive those feathering ones where you kind of have to keep them straight.
And it keeps you more on your toes driving, and you got to keep reading each horse and makes you more of a driver driving all the young ones all the time.
Yeah. Yeah, because you've got to drive every individual horse. It's not like you're driving the lead pair and the rest just follow deep into the corners.
Well, that's what this six right now. Last night, he was like Mother Goosing it, as we say, because he doesn't say those words.
Yeah.
But he's like the swing team was just killing him.
Yeah.
And so
you
got to drive.
Yeah.
And look like you're not struggling.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or like, there is some acting involved to make it look like it's comfortable, and even if it's not. Yeah. And I don't have a face to act. So usually if it's, I drove a mare for Chip at Indiana and we never had her in she got some sores in her mouth. I got a little fight with her before we left for that. And then we tried her in a Hackamore and at the show and he's like, well, you can drive her in there. And so I went into the warm up ring and we did it the day before too. And for all you don't know, that hackamore is nothing in their mouth. It's just nose pressure and curb pressure. So we went out in the warm-up ring, and she felt, I was like, well, I think she feels really good. You know, we were just walking around, and I'm thinking, well, this is, she's a three-year-old mare, and I thought, well, she's going to be fine, you know. So I get to the Coliseum, make that left-hand turn, get on the tan bark, and I give her a little pop with the whip, and by the time of the first turn, I was like, what the fuck am I going to do for the rest of this? Because that little bitch was just, like, oh, there's a dent in the patent leather thing of my foot, because I just couldn't, like, I was like, easy, easy, just relax, you're okay, try to talk her through it, and she just kept just bending and driving into it, but I came around, I was like, how does she at least look okay? He's like, yeah, are you all right? I said, well, as long as she looks all right, I'm going to finish
I'll
it.
I'll figure it out.
But yeah, you gotta, you learn different horses, and with the ones that the three-year-olds where you have to be a little bit more delicate, and you can't press on them, and you kind of just have to make it a good experience, and you're not going to go out there with a young group and kick ass, but we talked about in the start, seeing those glimpses of moments where they have greatness and
perfect,
and seeing that and kind of continuing the process without burning the crap out of them.
Yeah,
there's a lot of people come up to us with our colts that we're driving all the time. If you keep them until they get mature, you could be tough to beat in a fight. And I said, that doesn't put the food on the table.
No.
And
that was never our goal.
No.
No, to go out and have fun and rotate horses.
And train them and have get them a good start.
And when you win, it's good.
Yeah.
You're not going to lie about that. It's always great.
But even seeing a horse that you've got to a level and someone else takes it and starts winning and that's the feather in your cap. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
Because you're not selling them where they're on their downward turn. You're selling them when they're just hitting their freaking prime. Yes.
Oh, yeah. And we took horses. I broke a lot of horses for a living, too. We'd get anywhere from 15 to 25 outside horses every year to break. And I'd turn them over in 3 weeks, have them driving either side the tongue and driving single.
If they were mature enough.
Mature enough to drive single. Some of them needed a
little more time.
Little time to drive. And we got them all, our whole hitch, and the ones who were breaking all to ground tie. Linda and I go out and hook the six by ourselves, or the eight, or whatever. Every drop the ropes, they all stand there, and when it's time to go, we tie the ropes up on the hames at home, or take the ropes off and go out and go. And they come back, put the ropes on. Everybody stands there and
learn some patience.
Oh yeah,
yeah. So if someone's interested in maybe doing a weekend clinic or a weekend driving or just starting out that wants to kind of get some basic knowledge, how would they find you guys on Facebook? Or?
Well, I'll be honest, and I'll keep my Facebook page up for Rolling on Clydes, but they can give us a call at 814-571-6004 or 6005.
Awesome.
Four is mine, five is Roger, because we couldn't keep them straight. It's sequential. So
very, very cool. Well, I just think it's great to give people that are new to this or want to get better at it a firsthand right knowledge at some people that I truly respect, and they're actually horsemen. They're not pushing a horse to outside of its limits for a ribbon. They're letting these horses build up their own maturity and their own brain to enjoy their job. And I respect you as a driver because you actually drive your horses. You don't use the rail to turn them. And I think that is
drive into the corner.
Yeah, yes. I think that is pathetic nowadays that there's these it's racing and
Armstrong driving.
Yeah. Yeah.
Laying out flat. That just drives me.
Yeah, like I've talked with a lot of people on your horsemanship is really, really lacking, and it's being rewarded a lot. And to me, when I see someone that I think is actually a genuine horseman, I think that's a respect level. And I think more people need to be able to see that and appreciate that. And
maybe it'll come back full circle someday.
Oh, yeah.
I thought it would have. Well, there's been a few little incidents where I thought that would maybe kind of bring it back, but it doesn't really seem that way yet. But I think if you talk about it more and more, more people might actually grow a pair of balls to start calling some shit. Yeah. So I'm going to keep talking about it. So.
But there you go.
I really appreciate you guys sitting down. We'll have to get you back on. I'm sure you're going to think of more stories that I should have said that. But we'll have to get you back on after a recap of how the world show goes.
Perfect.
Awesome. Perfect.
Awesome. Good. Thank you, guys.
Thanks.
Yeah, thank you.